836 on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. You can find the Jefferson Exchange not just on the radio, but also on the web. Our website is jeffexchange.org. On the right side of that page, there are Listen Live links for all three services of Jefferson Public Radio. So you can listen to our Classics and News Service, Rhythm and News Service, or the News and Information Service that you're listening to now right there online by clicking a button. And, you know, given the fact that we're on a lot of AM radio signals, you might actually get a better sound coming out of your computer, which is to say nothing about the overall quality of AM. It just pinches your frequency bandwidth just a little bit. So that's the website, jeffexchange.org. We are also on Facebook. We are also on Twitter with information about today's program and future programs and recordings attached thereof. So glad if you check us out online. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations on the Exchange, here are the phone numbers, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm told there might be a little issue with our email loading up properly today. So if you're having trouble getting through by email, resort to the phone numbers. Again, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. As long as there has been concern about the environment in this country, there has been concern about mercury. It is highly toxic, not the kind of element you want in your food or water supply. So it should come as no surprise that the state of Oregon is looking at about a dozen rivers and their mercury levels. If action is required, the rivers could be targeted for cleaning up. The Rogue and the Mackenzie are among the rivers on the list, and there's already been what amounts to a huh from Eugene's water supplier about the focus on the Mackenzie, which provides Eugene's water. To explain what the program is all about, we have two guests with us from the Oregon DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality. Bill Myers is the Rogue Basin Coordinator. Bill, welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Lori Pillsbury is also a water quality coordinator working out of the Hillsborough office of DEQ. Lori, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So who can tell us more generally about the overall shape of the program and why there's an interest in mercury now when there's been an interest in mercury for a long time?
There has been an interest in mercury for a long time. And just to take a step back, in January, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality issued a list. It's the 303D list, which is required through the Clean Water Act, and that is a listing of impaired water bodies within the state. For this list that came out in January, there were additional water quality impairments identified for the Rogue River and approximately half a dozen other rivers within Oregon. That list is a requirement through the Clean Water Act that comes out every 2 years. To establish whether or not a water body is impaired, it requires sampling of resident fish tissue. When that list came out, the additional 12 or so water bodies were identified as being impaired through testing of fish tissues.
And it's a variety of rivers, large and small, correct? You got the Rogue, you got the Mackenzie, but you also have the Mid-Columbia in there, is that right?
There's the Mid-Columbia, there's the Saniam, there's the Tualatin, and a number of others.
So was there a reorganizing of issues from the federal government? Was there reorganizing of standards, something that put these out of compliance or close to out of compliance when they weren't before?
Our state standards have changed in that they've become more restrictive. And they are more restrictive because they're designed to protect the most sensitive populations. It's the population that really eats a lot of fish. So our standards are based on 23 fish meals per month. A person that eats 23 fish meals per month, which is approximately 175 grams per day, which is about 6 ounces. So it's very restrictive. And what that is that provides a margin of safety for those who consume fish. And our standards are based on fish tissue, but what we're really measuring is the quality of the water in which the fish reside. So we look at resident fish because they are an indicator of the water body in which they live.
So really back to square one, Lori Pillsbury, what are the effects that mercury can have on the human body?
So mercury is a neurotoxin, and it can have a variety of effects in the body. It is a cumulative toxin.
In other words, once in, never really gets out of the body?
Correct. Once it's in, you keep it. And it definitely accumulates over time. And that's why when you're looking at fish, the larger fish have a higher concentration of mercury in their body than the smaller fish, because they've been accumulating it over time. It's especially dangerous to sensitive populations. As Bill mentioned, those people who consume a lot of fish, but also to pregnant women, small children, older population. So it's especially toxic to those sensitive populations.
So if you're eating fish that eat fish that have some mercury in their tissues, that works its way up the food chain, I'm thinking.
Correct. Correct. And the basic guidance for resident fish, whether they're lake fish or river fish, is that the smaller fish are the safer fish. The older fish have larger body burdens. Stocked fish are also generally considered safe. Ocean-going migratory fish are considered safe. From the health authority perspective, so that's a sister agency, we have about 20 fish consumption advisories within the state of Oregon currently, and there are no advisories for migratory fish. So salmon, steelhead, that's been a portion of their life in the ocean, are generally considered safe to eat. There's been no indication that those fish are carrying heavy burdens of mercury.
Because they don't do any eating in the river system?
They do, but they're not representative of the river itself. They're representative of the river and predominantly the ocean, where they spend the majority of their time.
We're talking about concerns about mercury in Oregon rivers with Bill Myers and Lori Pillsbury from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Again, the email address might be spotty, so probably better off with the phone numbers. Lori Pillsbury, we're not talking about new accumulations of mercury, are we here? Or are we? I mean, is mercury still accumulating in rivers in Oregon, or is it pretty much old contaminations?
So mercury is really a worldwide problem. There are several known sources of mercury to the general area, not specifically talking about the Rogue Basin, but in general, mercury contamination comes from atmospheric deposition, from things like coal burning in power plants. It also comes from old mining activities. It was used in the processing of gold mining. It's also naturally present in the geologic formations, has been mined itself, but maybe just naturally present in the area. And then a very small portion of mercury actually comes from sources that people tend to associate with a source of something, like a discharge or a wastewater source. So really, you know, the biggest sources of mercury are atmospheric deposition and geologic. You know, it's present. So the fish are accumulating mercury, but these sources are around and they're global sources of mercury.
Bill Myers, if we're talking about, we're really talking about setting a standard, though, for the, as you mentioned, the most sensitive population, but for people who eat a whole lot of fish, right? I mean, 23 fish meals a month is probably at least 3 to 7 times what most of us would probably consume out of the river system, isn't it?
Correct. It's for that population that consumes a lot of fish, and a lot of discussion went into setting that standard.
Uh-huh. Let's take some calls here. We'll start off with Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about mercury in Oregon rivers with Bill Myers and Lori Pillsbury from the Department of Environmental Quality.
Howdy. When this story first broke, there were reports on the local news about it, primarily, I think, because the McKinsey is Eugene's main water source. Mm-hmm. And in local reports, it was mentioned that they've been testing the water for decades and not found a trace of mercury, yet you seem to have been the biological inhabitants. Given that mercury is so much heavier than water, I assume it's on the bottom of the stream beds and consumed by the bottom feeders. Should citizens of Eugene be at all worried about mercury intake in their drinking water?
All right, which is the very same question that that E-Web put out there, because E-Web, the Eugene Water and Electric Board, mentioned they test the water all the time. So what's the story here, Bill?
So in testing fish, you're testing fish accumulate mercury. So fish will carry a heavier concentration of mercury than what is in the water itself. So they're representative of what's in the water, but it's not the actual concentration in the water. In terms of a public drinking water system, all public drinking water systems in the state are required to test annually for a whole suite of contaminants, one of which is mercury. I haven't looked at EWEB's results, but I have looked locally within the Rogue, and there are no detects of mercury from any of the public drinking water systems that take water from the Rogue. It doesn't mean that the mercury is not present. It's present in very low, low amounts in the water column itself. What it is doing is it's accumulating in the biota, in the fish that are in within the river.
So is it safe to say then if you're not eating the fish, you're probably not going to have any effects of mercury in you from consumption of the water itself?
From consumption of the water itself, it meets all state and federal standards. And in fact, it exceeds it because there's no detect. And that is finished water. That's after it goes through filtration and it's ready to be delivered, to your house.
Let's take another call. We have Mark in Redding on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking mercury in Oregon rivers with Bill Myers and Lori Pillsbury from DEQ.
Good morning. When you test the fish, do you grind up the fish, whole fish, viscera and all, or do you separate away the viscera and just test the flesh, or do you use some other method?
Let's ask Lori. Thanks for that call, Mark.
Hi, Mark. So what we do for mercury is we collect the fish and we take the fillets off and we actually do a skinless fillet. So for mercury, we're only testing the muscle meat, the consumptive portion that you would eat. So we're only testing the fillet. We don't grind up the whole fish and look for mercury. We're looking at the edible portion of the fish and what we consider the risk to human health.
So that is where the mercury collects, though, right?
Correct. The mercury actually collects in the muscle tissue. Mercury tends to segregate itself into the muscle in the fish. But it is then, of course, the human health risk area because the fillets are the portion of the fish that most people are eating.
So, Bill Myers, which are the fish in the Rogue River system that seem to be accumulating the mercury?
The fish that we tested were smallmouth bass and northern pike minnow, both of which are considered non-migratory fish, and that's been their life cycle in the river itself.
I know people probably do eat the smallmouth bass, but what about the pike minnow? Is that a human consumption fish usually?
Not usually, although if you look online, there are recipes. Sound quite delicious.
How big a fish are we talking about here?
They're called pike minnows. However, the fish that we tested were around 14 inches, and they get to around 30 inches. They can be quite a large fish.
And they live for a fair amount of time, too, don't they?
And they do. And the fish that are in the Rogue are most likely Umpqua pike minnow. They are non-native to the Rogue system. They were introduced at some point back in time.
If a fish lives in one river, it's not going to end up in another river. I mean, it's not going to go out of the ocean and come up the Umpqua out of the Rogue or something, right?
No.
Mm-mm. All right. So not any movement from one river to the other. We didn't give the whole list here, but we got the Mackenzie and the Rogue for certain in our listening area. What are some of the other ones that might be issues from, say, Eugene on south?
So it looks like the rivers that are potentially going to be listed on the new list are a lot of different tributaries to the main stem Willamette Basin. So those are the Clackamas, the Coast Fork Willamette, and this is north of Eugene, but Multnomah Channel, the Middle Fork Willamette, the Santiam, the Tualatin, and of course the main stem Willamette has already been listed for mercury for several years. There are a couple of potential listings also on the east side of the state in the Umatilla Basin and in the Deschutes Basin.
All right, but it skips the Umpqua then? We're talking about the Rogue Basin, but not the Umpqua?
And so the reason for that actually is that we have a toxics monitoring program in the state, and we've been moving around the state collecting samples, and we haven't sampled the fish in the Umpqua as of yet under our toxics monitoring program. So the listings are based on the available data that we have. As we continue to move around the state in our program, we will be sampling fish in the Umpqua, and at that point there's a potential that the Umpqua may also make the list depending on the fish that we find.
Will that happen over the next 2 years or?
This should happen over the next couple of years. We are currently in the process of refining the program as we move forward, but we're looking at collecting fish from around the state in basins we haven't looked at.
All right, so what happens now with the information you have? There was, I understand, a comment period that just closed. Is that right?
The comment period closes on February 24th.
Okay.
So there's still time to make comments.
Okay.
Yeah, and then this the information that we're presenting and talking about today, it's all available on state websites, so oregon.gov, and either the health authority or the Department of Environmental Quality. Both of those websites contain all this information.
And you can arrange through, you can comment through either one of those portals?
Through the DEQ website.
All right. I'll see if we can get a specific address to stick up on Facebook later on in the day. But so once the comment period closes, then what are the likely actions that come about, Bill Myers?
You know, we touched briefly on source assessment. So what we do is down the road, we come up with a plan to address the sources, and that can be either through a basin-specific plan called a total maximum daily load, a
TMDL,
yeah, mm-hmm. Yep, familiar acronym, or potentially a statewide plan if we're seeing mercury issues across the state, which isn't highly unusual within the United States. So in the Midwest, the Great Lakes states, Michigan in particular, has a statewide mercury policy. And a statewide policy would address the sources that we have control over, which would be industrial waste. It is, you know, it's the waste that we all generate, fluorescent bulbs, it's, you know, thermometers, it's mercury switches from automobiles. So it would be a statewide education and collection kind of policy, potentially. Barring that, we would have a basin-specific policy, which would be a TMDL. The Willamette has been under a TMDL for mercury since 2006. And we're looking at those sources that we can control. So there's a lot of airborne deposition. There's a lot of natural mercury also. A lot of the natural mercury we can actually control because it's coming in from soils. It's coming in from erosion. When soils are eroding into rivers, it's also adding a mercury burden to those rivers.
And how well is the Willamette responding to the efforts that have been in place since 06?
There are collection event statistics. So the TMDL has been in place for 5 years, 6 years now, and it's going through a review. Local communities, the Department of Agriculture, forestry, the counties, they're all required to do certain things to address the issue. You know, and this is within the context of a broader TMDL where they're also looking at nutrients. They're also looking at temperature impacts. But it's all together in the form of a total maximum daily load approach.
When you measure that way, though, are you then testing water instead of fish? Or are you testing both or just the fish?
At this point down the line, you're testing. The first thing you look at is implementation. Are the actions that communities say they're going to take, are they taking those actions? Then the next step is, are those actions having the desired impact? And that's when you're testing the water down the line.
Is there a concern that there is the potential for more mercury to end up in waterways? I mean, granted, we've generally tended to phase out the mercury thermometers just to check your temperature, but we do have, you mentioned the fluorescent lights, particularly the compact fluorescents contain some mercury where the incandescent bulbs didn't. So given that those are often ending up in landfills, is there a concern that you could get mercury levels actually rising, Lori Pillsbury?
I think that's where the education component really comes in. If people really outreaching to the community and letting them know that, you know, mercury is contained within those bulbs and collecting those bulbs and having collection centers, you know, at the Home Depot and the Lowe's all have boxes. You can take those back. There is always a concern that since mercury is out there, that it can be released into the environment. But hopefully the energy savings with those bulbs outweigh the concern and the responsibility of the consumer to take those bulbs back to the collection areas.
Right, so generally take it back to the store where you got it. There
right.
should be a place.
Is there
that part
should
of,
be a place.
Is that part of Oregon law or is it more voluntary at this point?
I think it's more voluntary. And it really varies from place to place. Some mm-hmm. places I know will take them and other places will charge a fee to collect them.
All right. So check with the store where you buy your bulbs, as you're buying them, perhaps, and say, hey, you know, can I bring these back when they have gone kablooey on me? So, Bill Myers, if you don't eat a lot of fish out of, say, the Rogue River, if you don't eat a lot of fish out of the Willamette River, not the Willamette, the Mackenzie River, I mean, is there really any reason to be particularly concerned about what you're pulling out of the rivers if you do tend to fish either one of those?
I would say not. It's a dose related response. So if you're not eating a lot of fish, the rivers are certainly safe to swim in from a mercury perspective. And there's no, you know, you're not going to absorb mercury by swimming in the rivers. Drinking the water directly out of the river, we would never recommend that anyway, just due to bacterial contamination that's potentially present. And public drinking water supplies are monitored closely to ensure that they meet mercury standards. What our approach, DEQ's approach, would be a conservative approach that says the issue is here. We should address it. It's much better to address it at the source than to try to clean things up later on.
And does either one of you have information about which are the fish that you test on the Mackenzie? You mentioned the pike minnow for the Rogue. I'm curious about which fish are the ones that were the collectors in the Mackenzie.
So we sampled two species on the Mackenzie, the northern pike minnow, and also a large-scale sucker, which is a bottom-feeding fish. And all the fish collected in the Mackenzie were over the threshold level, so including the large-scale sucker, which tend to be lower because they eat lower on the food chain. They are bottom feeders. And so they're, you know, the intermediate level there that the predators are eating. So they are, so that shows you the accumulation. You know, it starts at the with the bottom feeders and then moves on up to the predators, like the northern pike minnow. But we did collect two different trophic levels in the Mackenzie.
Does the mercury actually tend to collect on the river bottom? Is that why the bottom feeders are going to end up showing it?
It's at low levels in the water, as Bill mentioned, but very low levels, and it is in the sediments. And it will, and since it will accumulate in the invertebrates that the bottom feeders are eating, so that are living in the sediments.
All right. So comment period open for 3 more weeks until February 24th. And we'll try to find a place for people to comment if you have concerns about regulation of mercury in river systems in the state of Oregon. Bill Myers and Lori Pillsbury are both with the Department of Environmental Quality. Bill Myers is the Rogue Basin Coordinator. Lori Pillsbury is a Water Quality Coordinator in the Hillsborough office. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much.
You.
All right. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. In hour number two, we'll talk about talking with Marvin Brown. We'll get into his book, How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. Next hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for listening.